This episode is brought to you by Intuit QuickBooks Bill Pay. You didn't start a business to spend your Sundays chasing invoices and manual data entry. But as you grow, accounts payable starts to feel like a full-time job you never applied for. Bills pile up, approvals get lost in email, and your vendors are constantly asking, "Where's my check?" It's distracting, it's stressful, and it's keeping you from the work that actually moves the needle. Intuit QuickBooks Bill Pay is the exit ramp. QuickBooks Bill Pay automates the busy work that eats your calendar by bringing every bill, every vendor, and every payment into one organized dashboard. Stop chasing details and start seeing the big picture. Know exactly what's due, who needs to sign off, and how it impacts your cash flow before the money leaves your bank. Vendors can even manage their own details so you stay in control of how and when you pay. Grow with confidence and put your AP on autopilot in QuickBooks. Learn more at quickbooks.com/billpay. Again, that's quickbooks.com/billpay. Terms apply. Money movement services are provided by Intuit Payments, Inc., licensed as a money transmitter by the New York State Department of Financial Services.
My name is Michael Bailey, and you're listening to the EDP Formula One podcast.
Hello there, welcome to the EDP F1 podcast with the usual crew of suspects around me. I have Kyle Cumbers here, Perry Hamilton, David Tillier. Gentlemen, hello.
Good evening.
How's it going?
Howdy.
Lovely, that was nicely done. And we're good, we all well?
Yeah. Very well.
Yeah. Yeah, brilliant. Storming it.
Mm. Sun is out-ish.
Just.
Was.
It's not raining. It's like Monaco here. In South Norwich.
It's a gimmick podcast.
I felt a bit bad after that in the end.
Really? Why?
Yeah, we were mocking you a little bit.
Oh, well, okay. No, don't. But, don't worry about that. I was mocking Monaco, so.
In the end, we could have done with a gimmick, really, couldn't we? Because how was it? The race sort of passed me by a bit, you know.
It was an okay Monaco race, I suppose. Mm. Nothing, apart from a few incidents. I mean, unfortunately, there's no real good battle for the lead. But, yeah, a few incidents, and that was about it, really.
A couple of traffic jams.
Yeah, I remember enjoying it. I just don't remember a lot of the things that went on. I mean, some of the big things were coming to mind, but, you know, when you watch a really good Grand Prix, you kind of have so many things to remember afterwards that you're going to remember for long periods of time, or at least hopefully long enough until we've done a podcast.
You'd think we'd make notes.
Yeah.
You would think that we would make notes or something like that, but we don't.
That's so 1992. Yeah. A lot of crashes, maybe short of racing, lots of crashes. Yes. Lots of people finding the wall. Some identically more than once.
Yeah. I think we've got a new Maldonado as well.
A new Maldonado?
Yeah. Well, I think...
Isn't Maldonado still Maldonado?
Yeah, he's a little bit. Yeah.
Is there room on the grid for two Maldonados?
Yes. Yeah. Well, we've still got the Grosjean. Obviously, he's still not capable of keeping.
Quote of the weekend goes to Martin Brundle for "That boy worries me." So, congratulations to you, Martin. You get quote of the week for that. Yeah. I think.
So, we've still got the Grosjean crashing all over the place. But no, I think Perez is starting to worry me a little bit in terms of he's looking a little bit Maldonado-y in the sense that he's very racy, but he doesn't seem to really know where the limit is.
He doesn't just get his elbows out, he gets his elbows and knees out, doesn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
A little bit physical, yeah, especially exactly. With his own teammate, which it always seems to be, JB, that he's pushing around, which is great.
And I have to say, of all the manoeuvres that he did, the one he did on JB was brilliant.
Yeah,
that was the best.
That was the best one.
It was the other ones that were a bit, you know, questionable, especially after the one on Kimi.
Mm. Yeah, and there's Alonso one as well. I mean, I don't know where guys stand on that, actually. When I saw the one that he took on Alonso, I didn't think Alonso should have to give the place over. That's my personal opinion.
No.
Alonso had the right to follow the racing line. They're saying, I sort of heard the commentators say, you know, Sergio had his nose ahead. At the correct point in the corner, I don't think he did have his nose ahead. I think Sergio was trying to force his way in. Fernando gave him the space. You know, they gave each other enough space. And if Fernando had continued along the racing line, he would have had to have crashed into him, and I don't know, it would have been very difficult to call, but I think that would have been, I personally saw it as a racing incident. I didn't see it as anything to give it, you know, to give the place over.
It was avoiding action rather than trying
Ferrari
to
Ferrari said
gain
it was about safety, and I agree with that.
Yeah, it's a hard one because you can argue both counts. I think I probably agree with you overall, isn't it?
But then at that point, if you can argue both sides well enough, surely it just goes down as a racing incident and no harm, no foul, and play on.
Exactly.
So I was a bit surprised when that happened.
Are we allowed racing incidents in Formula One anymore?
Yeah.
I would like more racing incidents in Formula One.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah.
A little bit more continuity and flow would be lovely. Well, you listening? Charlie Whiting, you listening?
I'm sure he listens.
Of course he is. Yeah, he's regular.
Every week.
Yeah, he's auto subscribed.
One point we should have is the race winner. We should probably mention that Mercedes won thanks to Nico Rosberg.
Yeah.
Pulled off the non-traffic jam that we were expecting. We were expecting him. The general consensus was he would end up on pole, but that he would just hold everyone up. Didn't happen, did it, Carl?
No, he had the perfect weekend. I think he's quickest in every session, including the practice sessions and qualifying, obviously. And
didn't get a fastest lap, though.
No, because I hear that went to. It was
Vettel again.
That was another very good quote.
I think I may have been premature with giving Brundle quote of the weekend, because Crofty had some golden ones. Crofty had a black rubber shod centipede of cars. I was gone. I thought, absolutely, that is so poetic.
Oh, no. That doesn't come just to the...
No, that's not off the top of your head. That's not improv. Thank you. That's written down stuff that he's got going on there.
Still.
Yeah. It's like an F1 Wordsworth.
Carried it off. So Nico, quick, showed great control and style and pace. I guess that's what a quick tyre test does for you, isn't it?
Well, yeah. So I'm not going to try and get into that because I don't know enough about that, and I think it's probably a lot of fuss over nothing, really. But yeah, I mean... You can't take it away from Rosberg. He did everything he needed to do to win that race. But if you ask Vettel, it was a procession, it was a train, because they feel that they could have gone faster, but they couldn't do anything about Rosberg. But then again, he always had an answer for them. He always kept the gap up just nicely. So I think the comments that Vettel's come out with are probably a bit unfair. Because they were all trying to manage their tyres, and it was a little bit of a slow pace to start with.
But presumably it's not the managing of the tyres that's keeping Seb back, it's the fact that the car wasn't set up to get more out of the tyres than Rosberg's.
Yeah, well, the issue that Vettel had was that Rosberg and Hamilton, to start with, were driving like, I don't know what he actually said, but effectively driving like Miss Daisy. You know, they were driving slow. And trying to basically eke it out because they wanted to do a one-stop. Everyone wanted to do a one-stop race. So rather than galloping off, they were pushing everyone back, and it was basically having a knock-on effect, so that Rosberg was able to have a little bit of a lead. But with Monaco, because everyone bunches up, it has a knock-on effect, and everyone just slows down that little bit. It's not like a normal race where everyone can sort of flow around the track. Like that. I think at the end of the day, that's it's most modern motor racing for you. I don't think.
Do you think for one second that if Red Bull were in the lead, that they would do anything different?
No.
If that's what the strategy called for, they'd back up the pace, and Sebastian would be the first person saying, if they don't like it, they can get past me.
Yeah,
you know, that's what it is still. Yeah. At the end of the day, it's still racing.
Yeah, exactly.
If you want something that's predetermined, go watch pro wrestling.
Yeah.
You know, that's what it is.
Trying to tell me that that's. Not real.
Shh. Whoa.
Christmas.
Easter fairies.
Shush.
Other things we should
mention. It's definitely real.
Okay, the thing that concerned me most for Red Bull is, and why I think this protest they made is a little bit ludicrous, is because when they looked at the tyres that were taken off of the respective cars of Rosberg and Vettel, the message went out over the radio, basically, to paraphrase, Seb, you've chewed your tyres to hell and back. Rosberg actually could have still gone a little bit longer on his tyres. His tyres are fine. Can you get that from one test? Can you get that from one test after a race? I don't think you get that kind of progression from just that moment. That's been a series of build-ups and a series of works that the guys in the factory have been doing. And it's being able to control that pace from the beginning and not have to worry that on a DRS zone you're going to get fleeced. Monaco doesn't have those positions where you can pass. And so at that point, you're looking at making your car as wide as possible, going the speed that you want to go, and if they can get past you, good luck to them.
Let's just explain this. Ms. Pirelli carried out a tyre test before Monaco, wasn't it? After Spain?
Directly after Barcelona, yeah.
Directly after Barcelona, with Mercedes borrowing their car, this year's car, to presumably get a better handle on the tyres. And whilst this is supposedly allowed for Pirelli's benefit, if it is counted as testing for Mercedes, then that is illegal mid-season testing.
Basically, Pirelli have it in their contract that they can request any team to do a 1,000-kilometre test to either work on forthcoming tyres or to work on safety issues for current tyres. What they were doing is actually working on forthcoming tyres. It's in Pirelli's contract. They are allowed to ask a team to do it. They asked several teams. Mercedes were the only ones that were really interested. All the other ones turned it down. So, you know, and it's all come to light sort of Sunday morning. Yet the test was carried. They were starting to get ready for the test as everyone else was packing up for the end of the Barcelona Grand Prix. So it's not like they did it in secret. They did ask the FIA for clarification as to whether or not it is allowed. The FIA said yes. So, you know, I think it's just a bit. It's again one of those things where all the, you know, the people that are complaining are just trying to get, you know, one little thing over the other and trying to, you know, throw the toys out of the pram a little
so
bit.
What's their argument? Why are they arguing it was unfair then?
Well, as far as they're concerned, they've basically seen that that Mercedes drivers and their Mercedes team managed to get some additional mileage on their vehicle. And they may well have been able to use it to their benefit. If you ask Ross Brawn, obviously he's not going to say that it was to their benefit. But if you ask Ross Brawn, they would say, "Well, we don't know what the tyres were. They're just plain black tyres. They've got no markings on. We're not allowed to run any additional parts. Not allowed to change anything because Pirelli want a stock car that will not change from the start of the 1,000 kilometre test to the end. They want consistency all the way through." So they weren't able to learn. Even if they wanted to try and get something out of it, they weren't able to learn something. The only thing that the drivers could have got maybe was a bit more practice around Barcelona, but then they'd just done the race.
Who needs that?
So they don't need it.
But also bear in mind, there's an inherent risk there for Mercedes as well, you know, because you're only allowed 8 engines for the season, you're only allowed a certain amount of gearboxes, you know, and you're only allowed to put a certain amount of mileage on these things before you've got to think, hang on a minute, this is going to give way. And we know how finely tuned and highly tuned these machines are. It doesn't actually have to have anything wrong for a component to suddenly just say, do you know what, I'm giving up, and it could go. And if that was to one of the engines, then you're an engine down for the rest of the season,
which is presumably why a lot of teams said no,
which is exactly probably. So if everyone had the opportunity, I don't know what they're griping about.
So calm down, guys.
I think Red Bull probably just want their own test now. That's probably why they're complaining.
Yeah, well, why not? Yeah,
that might be there.
Well, everyone else wanted their own double diffuser. How did that work out?
Exactly. It's another one of those things where, you know, they're Red Bull are moaning about the tyres, and they're now coming out because they can't moan about the performance of the tyres. They're now having to moan about the safety of the tyres because that's their way around of thinking that they might get their way. But it's a world championship team that want to win, but they'll want to win by any means necessary. And if they can get a small advantage by getting something to go their way, they will do. But like you say, it's not. They've done stuff in the past that where they've got benefits and other people haven't been able to get the most out of it,
and those other people cry foul, and it's just the way it works.
It seems to me like Red Bull are worse at doing it. It's their body language and the way that they talk about stuff. It seems to be like they're getting a little bit like having a bit of a hissy fit.
It's like a petulant kid playing a board game. You're beating me and I don't understand why, therefore you must be cheating.
Exactly.
That's the mentality.
Are they annoying us? Because I know a few years ago everyone kind of disliked Red Bull pretty much, and then they won people over. Are they annoying us?
They've annoyed me for ages. I've never pulled for Red Bull, so I can't say that it's sort of coming full circle for me. I can't say that
the only person out of all of their organisation, there's probably two people I like. Adrian Newey, because of what he's capable of doing. I like Mark Webber because of just Mark Webber. He is who he is. But I really, really dislike Vettel now. I mean, I used to like the guy, but didn't like how he would be so dominant. And you know, it could be a little bit boring by pole and then just sitting out front and controlling it, not being particularly exciting. But now I don't actually like him. Personality,
you are off DT's Christmas card list.
Yeah.
Sorry to say.
Yeah.
Deal with it.
Yeah.
Just because you know the way that he's now coming across in the media, some of the stuff that he's been saying about, like, again, these tyres, you know, complaining and saying that they're not safe and stuff. It just smacks of like you say, a petulant child.
And of course, the multi-21 issue. That has set a lot of people back. You know.
Yeah, and the finger.
Put the finger away.
Yeah. Red Bull do a lot of good for Formula 1. I mean, supporting two teams.
Yeah.
With Toro Rosso as well. So, but yeah, I can see the annoyance of Red Bull. But,
Nico Rosberg, just quickly, genuine contender this year?
No.
No. There's not enough proof that Mercedes have got their tyres sorted. I mean, we may have to wait till Silverstone to see if they have done. So yeah, at the moment it's a bit too early, but he's in top form at the moment, so yeah, he could do. It's up in the air still.
He's having a stormer compared to Lewis, you'd have to argue.
Yeah.
No? Would you not argue?
I think it's a little bit harsh on Hamilton. He wasn't, was he 0-9 behind him in qualifying, which is probably a lot to Lewis himself. And his race pace was quite good, and unfortunately he made a mistake by dropping too far behind him for the pit stops. Yeah, and I think it's a bit too early to write off Lewis. And you look at his points, he's got 60-odd points, and I think he'd have taken that at the start of the season.
The difference maybe is just that Lewis is in a new team, I suppose.
Nico isn't. What I was about to say, and also what we know about Nico Rosberg is he raises himself to his level of competition that's around him. And a lot of people said that when, you know, Lewis went to Mercedes, it was going to be a really good thing, not just for the team, but for Nico as well. And I think you've seen that in Nico. He raises himself to the level of Lewis Hamilton around him. And, you know, you say Lewis only marginally slower, but slower is slower. You know, Lewis has... I think the only reason that Rosberg hasn't taken more points off of Lewis is because, as we remember from Malaysia, when he was held behind him, you know, deliberately told you do not pass him. But if, you know, that gives him the motivation to say, okay, well, if it's marginal and you're going to make me stay behind, I'm going to make it so it's not marginal, and I'm going to force you to take notice of me. I don't think he's a title contender this year. I don't think the car's got enough tyres underneath him this year. Maybe next year, when everyone figures out a little bit more about what's going on. I think possibly he's certainly got the quality of drive about him to do so. He is a race winner now more than once, but he's not a title contender yet.
You can always learn about the tyres, though.
Yeah, I think looking at Rosberg, he is a new kind of level of driver compared to how he was previously. The thing about Rosberg in the past is you've always kind of gone, well, he's pretty good, but you could say something about his teammates. So like Schumacher, for example, he was brilliant, but he's getting on a bit, he's not as fast. Yeah, Rosberg's beating him, but it's because Michael Schumacher isn't at his peak anymore. But now he's up against Hamilton, who is, I think, you know, probably at his top of his game at the moment as a driver, and he's still beating Hamilton and definitely from a qualification point of view showing him a fresh set of heels. I think that shows more so than ever before that actually Nico Rosberg is a great driver. That being said, no chance of him winning the World Championship. There's only three men that are going to be in it come the end of the year.
I'm going to remember that, write it down, see how we get on.
Kyle already knows. I don't know why we've been playing this game.
Very nicely quiet, though.
He's just sitting there writing out his lottery ticket.
He's like, yeah, Nico. Yeah,
that's it.
All right then, gents. It's time for this. It's the EDP F1 Pit Stops. I always get really excited. I'm excited generally, but this is always that extra bit.
You have a little bit of excitement to make up for our lack of excitement, isn't that right?
Oh, I love Pit Stops.
Cajoling.
I love it.
Let's bang through them, shall we? Hethelback, Lotus, Grosjean. We've already given Mr. Roman a mention. Of course, the man who had a big weekend. I thought this weekend it was going to be, you know, a big weekend for him to prove that he'd got a no.
He takes one step forward, he takes two steps back, and to add to just round out cliche corner, he's just giving himself more rope to hang himself with. So I think he's causing himself a lot of issues, and I think he's causing the team a lot of issues. And I say this every time, if you don't see a sharp increase in quality and dependability, he's going to be gone next year.
He's a cracking racer, I still think he's ultimately quick. Very interesting what David Coulthard was saying, which is that if there's something in his peripheral vision or something that just knocks him out of his stride, it tends to end up in a crash.
He's like a dog in up seeing a squirrel.
Well, it's just just something that he hasn't quite got.
I mean, the accident in free practice three, which was caused by Lewis Hamilton coming out of the pits. Which isn't a good sign, really. For
if it was Maldonado coming out of the pits, maybe you could understand it.
I suppose this is his last chance, we keep hearing, and there's sort of moments Eric Boulier apparently told him to wake up after his third crash or second crash or of the weekend. So
rightfully so, man.
Team did a terrific job to get the car out for qualifying.
I heard front wings, they must have had the most. To, yeah. They must have gone through four or five, wasn't it?
Yeah. Thing was, they did a great job getting the car back on the track. And then he delivered a brilliant lap with one shot.
Yeah, one hit, and he was so fast. It was amazing.
Then he put it in the wall.
Well, I mean, I'm just glad for him that he's got his career in banking to fall back on, to be perfectly honest with you, because his cards are marked, unfortunately. I mean, Lotus have got a very nice pool of drivers to fall back on. The only thing that Grosjean has got in his favour is that they probably won't have Kimi Raikkonen next year if all the rumours come true.
Which are that he'll go to Red Bull,
presumably. Apparently so, yeah. So, yeah, I think I've come out and said this before, I personally wouldn't employ Grosjean. He's not reliable enough. He's quick in small bursts, but you know, people like Fernando Alonso are perfect examples of how you can win world championships even when you don't have the quickest car, or get close to winning world championships, I say, when you don't have the fastest car. You know, being balls out quick isn't necessarily the best way to be, and I think Grosjean either needs to try and find some kind of balance, or he's going to be out of the job very soon.
It's about picking his spots.
Yeah,
that's exactly what it's like. I mean, they say that about Alain Prost, one of the greatest drivers we've had. Yeah, the professor. He knew exactly what he needed to do to win a race, and if that wasn't being DT, the balls out fastest man on the track, then it didn't have to be. He was an expert at doing what he needed to do, and that's what Roman needs to do. He needs to do what he needs to do, and it's not driving up the backside of someone in the middle of Monaco.
How good a banker is he, so to speak?
I didn't
know about this banking career.
Do not know.
On the Swiss banking scale of 1 to 10, or it should be, I suppose, into Dies, then I honestly don't know, DT. No.
All I know is that when he first came into Formula 1, which was, 2009, he would come to a Formula 1 Grand Prix, race, and then he would go back to Switzerland, work in a bank, and then he'd then get back on a plane, come and do a race, and then go back
what
and
a dude. In a bank. See, this is why I love the guy.
You know, so
full on commitment. Exactly. Kimi, just mention him as well. I mean, I don't still really know how he picked up any points. He got slung into the wall by Perez, let's be honest about it.
That's because Kimi's a legend. That's how he managed to get points.
And then he offered to smack, well, he said that someone should punch Perez in the face to sort him out.
Yeah, I think Kimi was a little bit too lazy to do it himself.
Well, I suppose. You know. When you've got people around you who can do that. Miraculous stuff from Kimi.
This was Felipe from from the beginning of last year, wasn't it?
Amazing how you can produce two identical crashes like that.
Yeah.
I still think there was something mechanical on the car. I mean,
they found today second crash they confirmed is a suspension failure,
which kind of means the first crash was identical. Identical, that maybe something happened.
It was a very peculiar crash. I mean, I know, and you're a passenger from the moment you lock up, so especially around Monaco, you've got no idea, but. Yeah.
Didn't want to see the onboard. It looked really odd because the right hand wheel seemed to be pointing straight, and the left hand front wheel was pointing across the corner.
Was this the first crash?
The first time, yeah. I didn't see the onboard, the slow motion onboard from the second crash, but the first one, yeah. The right front wheel seemed to be going straight, and the left front seemed to be off at an angle, so it looked like something had gone wrong where he didn't have his full steering angle, which is kind of maybe why he just plowed straight on.
Well, it could be a big weekend,
but at least he was coming okay. Up.
At least
that's
okay.
The most important thing, is it? At least he was okay.
Yeah.
Slightly less okay second time round, but just okay generally.
I guess he's had worse impacts, bless him.
He has indeed.
Caterham, finally, just mentioned them, maybe more specifically, Guido van der Kaart, I think it is. Who knows? But he's Dutch.
GVD.
GVD. GVD. GVDG.
But even that's
GVDG. That's much easier to say.
GVDG. I forget that.
Brilliant effort to finish, to qualify 15th. Probably as good as Caterham have done off the top of my head. I don't think they've had a better qualifying.
13th with Heikki Kovalainen in 2000
in Malaysia or somewhere,
2010 2011, something like that.
Somewhere water soaked.
Yeah, the thing that they did very well with Heikki, but other than that, this was the best qualifying they've ever had.
Brilliant effort, and he replicated it in the race 15th, although at a time you wondered if he could maybe sneak up to 13th and at least match Mauritius' best effort. Positive signs.
engaging.
Yeah, I think just on Van der Garde, sort of him personally for his career, he sort of, when you're in them sort of teams on the bottom, you've got to shine when you get the chance. Mm. And damp conditions in Monaco was his time, and he did that, and he's outperforming Charles Piquet, right? Who we did rave about last year.
You're mad. Let's put the brakes on that.
That was a Tillier special. DT brought him up, and then we all mocked
him. You were linking him with Ferrari at one point.
That's right.
Ideal number two. No, it's a new season. You know, that was last season. This is this season.
Did Guido let himself down a little bit with the knocking up his front wing?
No. It's Monaco.
Yeah, it happens. It happens. Okay, discussion time. We have three subjects and we will discuss them as we go along. That's how we do it now on the EDP F1 podcast, which means I now need your guys, who was driver of the weekend.
It's a difficult one to, if it's a difficult one to go with anyone other than the winner and pole man. Because at Monaco, it's not like a race where you can get pole, do a Sebastian Vettel, shoot yourself out, and suddenly you're, you know, a lap ahead, and within 5-10 laps you're uncatchable.
But
you can't do that. You know, it's very difficult. You have to maintain the lead, and as we see, one lapse of concentration, you know, someone coming out of the pits at the wrong time, inconvenient to you though it may be, and suddenly you're in the wall. And I think it was a commanding performance from Nico Rosberg, so I will give it to him. He's my driver of the weekend. When you put it on pole and you win at Monaco in a commanding way, it's hard to pick anyone else.
Kyle.
Rosberg is the obvious one.
Obvious, you hear that, Ben?
Obvious. Right? No imagination.
Kyle's now going to open it up. Here we go.
But also Till. I thought he deserves a mention.
Yeah,
for a very good fifth position.
He would get my vote, I must admit. Some cracking overtakes.
Yes.
And as Force India, or I think Vijay Mallya said himself, he needed that. He needed a good weekend.
Well, my driver of the weekend is shared, because I can't pick between the two, and that is Rosberg and Sutil. Sutil,
how comfortable is that fence, DT?
it's chafing a little. Sutil showed how it's done, but I think to go on the flip side of driver of the weekend, I'm going to have to go with the, I think we put the opposite of driver of the weekend.
Donkey of the weekend. Donkey.
Goat of the weekend.
And that goes, that's again joint with Grosjean and Perez. Because Perez was quite impressive and then quite ludicrously unimpressive at the, a few laps later. And the thing with Formula 1 is that, you know, to finish first, you have to finish. Or to finish well, first you have to finish. If you can't bring it across the line, then that's silly. And he made some really stupid overtaking manoeuvres, and then Grosjean was just, well, we've already said.
The only disappointment with Sergio in trying to take that award was that he just needed to really take out Jensen when he was trying to get across to get into the pits. If he'd managed that, then that would have nailed, you know, to have taken out a teammate trying to get across the pits would have just been fantastic.
I did laugh quite,
and then he would have
bit.
Taken his shirt off, and he would have been wearing like a Mercedes t-shirt underneath, and it would have been just like pro wrestling.
Yeah,
so, you know, I'm bringing it back around.
Seamless. Right. Anyway, team of the week end.
I'd probably give that to Red Bull.
They did well, didn't they?
Very well.
In fact, they liked this track. Really,
they took a huge advantage of the colossal mess up by, whether it was Hamilton or whether it was the pit crew, who knows. Mm. But they should have been able to get both their guys in and both their guys out, and that didn't happen. And once Red Bull got that hold on second and third, they kept it, you know. And any time you can get two of your cars across the finish line of Monaco, let alone two on the podium, you're doing well. So for me, hats off Red Bull, good race from them this year.
I'm going to go Mercedes, just purely quickest car there, so my obvious one.
So obvious car. They shook off the complaints and politics well in the end.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Caterham.
It's not a prediction, DT.
No, I know.
Kudos points to team of the weekend, mate.
I can't go, but I could go with Red Bull or Mercedes, you know.
A little bit obvious,
and you guys have already taken that, so I'm going to go, I've decided to go off on a slight tangent. I have to say, well done to Caterham, best improved team. So, team of the weekend.
Even though Marussia finished ahead of them.
Yeah, they were a bit of a haphazard. You know, they had problems, they had issues.
Okay. So, fair point. Highlight. Go on, DT.
Highlight. Again, it's going to be another Caterham one. Highlight was seeing Geir Vandegaard in the top 10 times in Q2. I know he eventually finished 15th, but that quick gamble for Slicks. And I was just going, come on, get Q3. I thought somehow he was going to do it. I thought it was fantastic.
I was in the same place with you, DT. Yeah. I was feeling the same thing. It's not my highlight, magic. But
yeah.
That's... So your highlight of the race is actually from qualifying.
Yeah.
Love it.
Wow.
So well, highlight of the weekend.
Oh, okay, highlight of the weekend.
Yeah.
Right, okay. My highlight, and this is, even though I didn't give him driver of the week, my highlight is Adrien Sutil just shredding people at Lowe's hairpin. I mean, hats off. I was sitting watching it with my sister, of all people, who, you know, hats off to Nicola, hello. You know, she does like a bit of Formula 1. We grew up watching it with my dad, but she's sort of gone off of it in recent years. But she was watching it there with me at the house, and someone tried to overtake on the way down into Lowe's. And I remember saying, God, you've got to be good to pull off going around in Lowe's. And then he did it twice. And there were a couple of occasions where someone, I think, even tried to go around the outside. And at that point, I was very firm in saying, that's ridiculous. But to actually see overtaking manoeuvres, to the point where they had to warn, was it Jensen they had to warn, or Sergio? They had to warn one of the McLarens to say, be aware, Sutil is carving people up at Lowe's. He'll probably try it on you. Now, whether that's just a case of having fresher tyres or what have you, the point is, we've seen between Hamilton and Massa a couple of seasons ago what can happen if you miss time going up the inside at Lowe's, and Sutil pulled it off not once but twice. Absolutely. And for me, his overtaking ability there was outstanding.
Prices.
I think mine's going to be qualifying, the whole of qualifying. It was a brilliant qualifying session, and it was really good to watch a qualifying session. It actually mattered.
Yeah.
And it's been a long time since
that's
then.
True, yeah. So,
it's good fun to watch the qualifying session that starts wet and ends dry as well. That hasn't happened for a little while.
You've got to pick the time to go on to the slicks, and you've got to make it happen
all the time. And
you think about the last time a car won not on the top, on the front three from qualifying. Mine, I think, was when Kimi got done by Perez, and then had to get a slow puncture, didn't he? And the backlog of cars behind him was comic. They just couldn't get past. It was like 20 or 10 cars really in a proper traffic jam. A bit like when I last went round to Monaco, to be honest. A bit like that.
Can I add an extra highlight in?
If you're quick.
Yeah, very, very quick. This is for Sky viewers only, and I did take a picture of this, which I will show around the group. But I don't know whether anyone saw this. Natalie Pinkham on, I think it was Bernie Eccleston's boat, in one of those sort of build-up things, and she was wearing a rather nice pink bikini and sitting in the hot tub, and I quite enjoyed that. That was a good build-up. You know, that's why I love the Monaco Grand Prix, you know, the glitz and the glamour.
Right then, gents, I think we're going to wrap it up there. That is Monaco for another year, iconic and put to bed, alas. Canada next, so we'll be back with some Canadian preview-litude. That's definitely not a word. Twitter at EDPF1 or at Michael J. Bailey DT
at Dave Tillier.
I wonder if anyone is at DT. Someone must be.
Yeah, I even tried at the DT, and someone's taken that. I was really upset.
You probably find their first name's Thed and their surname begins with T. That's probably why, and they're upset that you're just trying to do it for insurance.
Perry?
I'm PedHD56, and yes, there are 55 other PedHDs.
Oh my goodness, that's
why. No, it's my jersey number. It was my jersey number when I played American football. That's why I have 56. But
deal with that. They retired it, didn't they?
PedHD, no. they gave it to a guy who warmed the bench for the year after me, Tom McLaughlin. That's right, T-Mac, I'm calling you out. He's going to get tweeted that.
It's just got strangely political.
AK Cumbers.
There's only one Kyle Cummins. He doesn't need no number. Alright then, thanks gents. We'll be back very soon with a look ahead to Canada. Until then, goodbye.